Representatives from the hospitality sector will meet with government officials today to discuss how new indoor dining rules will be enforced. Indoor dining is set to resume for fully vaccinated people and those that have recently recovered from COVID no later than July 26th. The digital COVID cert will act as proof of vaccination, and HSE compliance officers will be visiting premises to check only vaccinated people are eating inside. There will be fines of up to €2,000 for forging the certificate, and potential fines for restaurants and pubs who fail to carry out checks. And joining us on the show to discuss this is Fianna Fáil TD from Míle Cathal Crowe. Good morning to you, Cathal.
Good morning. Good morning, Ellen.
So we know what's happening, but I have heard a couple of opposition TDs speaking this morning. People Before Profits, Gino Kenny, thinks we should wait another 6 to 7 weeks, possibly the start of September, until more people are vaccinated. And Paul Murphy of Rise opposes it, says it's a terrible decision.
I suppose they're looking at it through the metric and the lens of health and where COVID is at as a, you know, as a health crisis. And I think the overnight figures and the trend across the last number of days should be guiding as well. So the overnight figures were 600 cases of COVID nationally, 16 in ICU and zero deaths. It's those final two figures, 16 in ICU and no one dying of COVID overnight. That's, I think, some assurance that COVID has become more manageable, largely due to the fact that are older people, people in nursing homes, are vaccinated, a huge cohort of population now fully vaccinated, it's becoming far more manageable.
We're also joining us is Michael McNamara, independent TD from Scariff. Good morning to you, Michael.
Good morning.
What do you think of that? Gino Kenny, Paul Murphy would like us to hold off a bit, terrible decision, or do you think the vaccination rollout programme is proceeding fairly well at this stage, that we're okay to open up indoor dining and hospitality from July 26th?
Well, I mean, we opened up indoor dining and hospitality generally to a lesser extent throughout last summer when there was no vaccinations. I never really bought the idea of the substantial meal, but certainly in respect of restaurants, there is an argument that that, you know, when people are seated, they're there for a limited period of time and they're separated, and people come into a restaurant in a grouping and remain in that grouping. And if that advice was valid last year, I just don't understand why there has been such an attempt to shut down indoor hospitality this year. I mean, it's been welcomed by groups only because they're desperate to open up, and that's entirely understandable. I think almost every other country in Europe is open for indoor dining, has been for some time. So I don't really understand the approach. I mean, I'm very minded of that line, when the facts change, I change my mind, what do you do, sir? But I mean, it's about 2 weeks now since myself and Cathal were on the programme, and we both thought this was a very bad idea. We both knew that the vaccination, thankfully, programme, that everybody who wants to be vaccinated is being vaccinated. That's a huge proportion of the Irish population, much higher than most other countries. Equally, the Delta variant was becoming the dominant variant and spreads more easily. So I suppose what I don't see is what's changed in the past 2 weeks to suddenly make this a good proposal. It does differentiate between people. You know, I think we need to move away in society from viewing our friends, our neighbours, fellow human beings as just reducing them to being receptacles of a virus. I mean, you know, we do need to look at human beings more broadly again, I think, in society, both in a healthcare, from a healthcare perspective and from a general societal perspective. I fear this is divisive, discriminatory, and would be very difficult to implement.
Michael, I'll just put that to Cathal. Is it discriminatory? Because Michael isn't the only one I've heard saying that.
Yeah, I suppose, look, there's no denying I've got a lot of emails. I'm sure Michael has. All TDs are getting emails. Some people feel, you know, that this is divisory. A lot of people have chosen not to get vaccinated. I don't agree with them. I'm pro-vaccination myself. I'm promoting it. But I respect that. And there's a decision there for them, taken by them. It's their own choice. We have to defend that. I think this is stitched into the legislation quite importantly. And this is harps on to the point I would have made the last time I was on your show, Alan. It's very important that, I suppose, both vaccinated and unvaccinated enjoy the same freedoms. So stitched into this legislation is provision for people to be tested. So the antigen test, we've often spoke about on your show, it's cheap, it's very effective. It can prove that at a particular time you're not carrying the antigen, you're safe, basically. You can take a test in the afternoon and that evening be in your local restaurant or bar, enjoying a night out with your family or friends. That's stitched into the legislation. It doesn't kick in immediately, I will admit that. And that will annoy some people. But by and large, I've been speaking to publicans throughout the county. This is getting support from vintners, from restaurateurs. They desperately want to reopen. It is going to annoy people for a number of weeks, but this is a good way, I think, to see things reopen. It's not ideal, but it's the best thing we can have this summer in terms of restarting this vital part of our economy.
Cathal, digital COVID cert is going to be the proof of vaccination, which I think is probably, I think we'd all agree, was the best option in terms of proof of vaccination that were being considered. People who've recovered from COVID will also be able to enter pubs, cafes and restaurants, but how are they going to prove that they've recently recovered from COVID?
So a letter from their doctor, a signed up letter. I know there's a lot of people who's This has sparked a huge debate overnight. Could there be forgery? I suppose there can be, and there are fines for that. You've just referenced them at the top of the show. So to begin with, I suppose digital green certificate does provide for a number of things. It provides for evidence of COVID vaccination, COVID recovery. So people across a six-month period should have the antibodies in their systems to not be carrying COVID yet again. And the other way then is through the forms of testing, namely PCR testing, which is the gold standard. It's expensive. An antigen, which I just referenced. So that's what this digital search on someone's phone will be able to show when you go into a bar or restaurant. And it's very important for those who are unvaccinated to know that this does provide for them. It doesn't provide for them immediately. There is a difference in that. But it does provide for them. And I would have had chats. I text, indeed, the Taoiseach and all my colleagues who serve in Cabinet last Friday. I got phone calls back from several of them, including the Taoiseach, who agreed that antigen would have to be and testing would have to be a part of this going forward. There is a sunset clause on this, which means this will expire after a number of months. We hope we'll be in a very good situation by then. It looks like we will be, with vaccinations really on the up. But this isn't going to be a permanent thing where there's some divide in society. Absolutely not. I don't think anyone would stand for that, let alone the public.
Michael, the one element of this that seems to be catching a lot of people's attention is that children who aren't vaccinated will be allowed to dine indoors if they're accompanied by an adult. And I suppose, you know, if you're in that setting, you're not exactly in your family bubble anymore. And, you know, how is someone who's under the age of 18 who's unvaccinated not a threat, but someone who's 18 or over is?
Yeah, I mean, there is that. It seems arbitrary, but I mean, I can understand the purpose behind it. I mean, you know, we don't want to drive a wedge between people over 18 to whom vaccines are made available, at least in theory, not fully yet, but and people under 18 to whom they're not made available. But I suppose I would be concerned that this is not going to go away in 3 months. I mean, I remember we had, was it 2 weeks to flatten the curve last March, 12 months? And we had pieces of legislation with sunset clauses that had been rolled over and rolled over and rolled over again. In fact, you know, we just rolled over the Offences Against the State Act a couple of weeks ago under Dáil, that's been in place now for since the 1970s. So, you know, the precedent isn't great for letting legislation like this lapse. My concern is that instead of it ending and lapsing, and that there won't be this permanent divide in society that Cathal and I would both fear, that it will be expanded. I mean, are we going to see students allowed back onto campuses if they can prove vaccination, and excluded from campuses if they can't in September? I fear that will happen. I don't know, but I fear that will happen. I mean, if you were to say that 12 months ago that was a possibility, you'd be labelled a conspiracy theorist. But if you were to say 1 month ago that people were going to have to prove their vaccination status or other health statuses to bouncers at the door of a restaurant or a bar, or that publicans were going to be forced to look for this in order to be able to open up, and restaurateurs who are provide, you know, are very valuable employers right across Clare, they were going to have to ask for this. If you said that a month ago, people would say you were crazy, and now we're doing it. So I just fear that we're on this kind of slippery slope. I don't know where it'll end. I certainly won't be voting for it. And as regards Cathal's assurances and what's in the legislation, I do find it slightly assuring what he said, but I haven't seen the legislation. I don't think anybody has seen the legislation yet. You know, we shouldn't, and I'm told, but I don't know, I mean, I'm told by Cathal what's in it. I welcome that. But I shouldn't be told on Tuesday morning what's in legislation that's going to be rammed through the Dáil without a proper debate. And there's no other word for it other than ramming it through. I mean, we elect representatives in a deliberative democracy so that we can discuss legislation and move forward. And it's a lot easier to achieve a consensus if you actually have an opportunity to discuss issues, make amendments. And if the government were in the position to even look at some of the bona fides of the amendments proposed. But I can guarantee you now that the Minister for Health will nod and smile and do his usual PR stunt, but he won't accept any amendments. He won't even think about accepting amendments. So this will be rammed through regardless of what's in it. I haven't seen it. I don't think many government TDs have seen it. We're all working off media leaks. That's not a way to legislate. It's not a way to run a country, especially on something that has the potential to be so divisive into the future.
Cathal, the potential fines, a fine of up to €2,000 for forging a document and fines for a premises that doesn't carry out checks. I'm sure the hospitality industry, you know, they are willing to agree to this because they just want to get opened and in business again. But there's going to be a serious element of self-policing about this. I mean, how workable is this in terms of them, their staff who are already going to be extremely busy having to carry out these checks? And what if you face a bit of aggravation from somebody who, you know, doesn't walk away when you say, well, I'm sorry, your cert isn't valid, or that letter from your doctor is forged, or whatever it might be. What good are the fines in general if it's going to be self-policed?
Yeah, I'm happy to answer that, and I will in a moment. I just first want to just reference one or two points there made by Michael.
Go ahead.
This isn't Germany of the 1930s. You know, this isn't.
I never said this was Germany of the 1930s, and I don't want to be misquoted.
To be fair, Cathal, I don't think that's what Michael was comparing it to.
No. It's a point I'm making. Because it's a point I'm making.
And we appear to have lost Cathal. Hello, Cathal.
Sorry, can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you now. Sorry, you were just stopped mid-sentence there.
That's what happens when I've a big ear that hits the mute button. No, if I can just make the point. No, I'm not putting words in Michael's mouth, but I do want to dismiss this point because it crops up time and time again. The Offence Against the State Act, that deals with criminality. What we're talking about here is COVID, keeping people safe, making a lot of unsavoury decisions, but unsavoury decisions that will reopen society, will keep people healthy and protect people overall. So that's really where things are at. And there is no basis, there is nobody going to extend this beyond when the period it's necessary for. And that, I really want to assure people, people are scared enough. People are scared to touch door handles, flush toilets, go on public transport. They do not need another level of fear and anxiety that some forms of legislation will remain with us longer and longer, and possibly forever. That isn't the case. And I really want to now to address your question that you put a moment ago. I think in every pub context, there's already a degree of enforcement. We all remember Alan and Michael and yourself. We all, back in the day, would have been ID'd coming into places, possibly refused entry at times, or refused drink. Then the smoking ban came in 2004. People did try to defy that. They lit up cigarettes and they were told to leave the premises. So there's a form of enforcement happening on any night of the year in a pub or a bar, and that has always been the case. I think vintners...
Cathal, though, just to jump in there, I think the difference in this occasion is, whereas previously someone who wanted to come in and smoke or so on might have been in the establishment a couple of nights previously, here now we have people who have been starved of a social life for quite a long time, and if they're stopped at the doorway to an establishment where they're looking forward to their first meal or drink in a long time, they may be a little more irate, for want of a better word.
So to begin with, this is for vaccinated people. There's a huge amount of fully vaccinated people, almost 2 million people, and we'll be at almost 80% of the adult population, which is where the HSE said they ideally want to get to. You know, we're in a matter of weeks of that. So to begin with, this is for fully vaccinated people. Not ideal. I'm the first to admit that. I've said it many times in your show. We then move on to this next phase where with testing you will be allowed in. Now, it's very important that listeners understand what that means. That means that in time you should be able to get a very cheap 3 or 4 euro antigen test and take it, you know, that afternoon and later on that evening be in your local pub. I mean, that's the price of a few packets of peanuts. It doesn't even equate to the price of a pint. I think it's a very simple thing to ensure that you're safe, but also the customers are safe. One of the publicans I spoke to last night said, you know, she very much wants to see her locals getting back, sitting on the high stools. It won't be ordinary or normal, but it's a small price to pay to keep her safe, her staff safe, her customers safe. You're either vaccinated or you take one of these cheap tests and in you go and you have a good night. We won't get to that point immediately, and I've made that a few times already in my contributions, but that is where we want to get to. And eventually we want to get to the point where none of these restrictions live, and people can be crowded in top of each other in a safe environment, as we would have always had in Irish pubs down through the years. That's where we all want to get to.
Michael, the time limits that are proposed if tables and establishments aren't 2 metres apart, is that a fair alternative if there isn't the space to do so?
Look, I mean, I just think a lot of it is frankly ridiculous, because there has to come a point in society when people determine whether they want to assume a risk or whether they don't. I mean, have you ever walked into a bar, taken a look around and said, God, I don't really feel comfortable in this bar, I'm going to leave again? I have. You know, nobody's ever pulled me into any bar or restaurant, ever. I've gone in of my own free will. So I think, you know, we have to return to a situation where people make decisions for themselves. Do they like the look of the bar? Do they feel safe in it? Do they like the distance between tables? Do they like the clientele? Do they think they're going to enjoy an evening there? Do they think they're not going to enjoy an evening there? I mean, these are choices that people have been making for themselves since God knows how long, but certainly all of my life. And I think we're going to have to return to that at some point, because, you know, even with all of this, I mean, it would be something if vaccination guaranteed that you weren't going to get sick. It doesn't, unfortunately. It does dramatically reduce the risk of being hospitalised and getting seriously sick, but it doesn't stop the risk of getting infected, and it certainly doesn't stop the risk of it spreading. It does reduce it, but it doesn't stop it, and it doesn't even reduce it. I think it reduces it to about 60%. That's what Public Health England are suggesting. So, I mean, to divide society in the way that we're going to do on the basis of something that is not, if this was a magic bullet, I would say perhaps. And even then I would have my doubts about it, because at the end of the day, we're going to have to get back to people making choices for themselves. I'm afraid I don't find Cathal's point on the limited period of time in any way reassuring, because we've had so many limited periods of time since this started. I mean, the last limited period of time was, you know, we had a number of TDs being photographed with pilots and supporting the pilots, and yet we rolled over the mandatory quarantine provisions thereafter. We were told that the digital green cert was going to be the panacea that came into force all over Europe on the 1st of July. The 4 days afterwards, the Minister for Health makes a new regulation that leaving Ireland before the 19th of July is a without a reasonable excuse, which is so vague as to be non-enforceable, perhaps, making that a criminal offence. We had the Minister for Health looking to have his powers to make new legislation extended in the Dáil. He said he didn't expect to use it about a month ago now. Mm. And now we have this. So, like, I'm afraid I just can't accept that we're going to let this lapse at any point in the near future or even the medium term, because, you know, to me it feels like we're like the frogs in the boiling water. You know, we're accepting more and more and more things that if we were told would happen a year ago, we'd have said, God, whoever's saying that's complete conspiracy theorist, God, that'll never happen, nobody could ever countenance that. People are doing it.
Okay. Yeah, it may require extension, and that's the reality of these kinds of laws, you know, and it may require extension based solely on health metrics at the time. But to draw an analogy with legislation that came in the 70s and still is being rolled over, that'll drive people absolutely gaga. I mean, if people are listening and thinking,
but it is being rolled over.
Sorry, but that deals with criminality, drug dealers.
And this,
separate. It's very hard we have this debate now, because it will drive people.
Gentlemen, if you can take turns, because we can't hear either of you.
Well, if I could make the point that what this legislation does is criminalise ordinary, everyday human activity. It makes it an offence to enter a bar, as I understand it, but I haven't seen the legislation. It makes it an offence for a local publican. And by the way, you mentioned being asked for ID. As a young adult in Scariff, I was never asked for ID. And like, I was contacted by a publican who's not in Scariff, who would be considered a very responsible house, as pubs go. She said, under no circumstances is she going to be asking people for this. That she will allow her customers in, but she will not ask people for it, because she thinks it's a complete invasion of their privacy. But look, that's not the point I wanted to make. The point I wanted to make is that, like, that this criminalises ordinary human activity.
Okay, we'll let Cathal in now. Michael, we'll let Cathal in now.
No, the point I've been making is, the law Michael referred to just a few moments ago is a law dating back to the 1970s, which relates to thugs and criminality. That is not the person who frequents Clare pubs. You or anyone listening here this morning, the law being passed here, it's not nice, nobody likes this, but it's an enabler. If you're a publican, this enables you to open your door to welcome customers back in within a matter of days. There'll be people and regulars going back immediately, because a lot of people are vaccinated. There's a choice of people who vaccinated right now down to 18-year-olds, and that'll be further extended in the weeks ahead again. What we're going to have here is enabling legislation, which initially will allow the vaccinated in, and very quickly will allow people who've been tested. And okay. As I said, there's very cheap forms of testing, price of a couple of packs of peanuts, and you can enjoy all the freedoms you want, and you can still hold on to that choice that I don't necessarily agree with. You can still keep that choice not to get vaccinated. That is quite similar to what's happening in other countries. We've seen countries that have gone entirely the other way, like the Netherlands, who opened nightclubs and were having free-for-alls. They're now rowing back from that. So there is evidence across Europe and across the world that a full laissez-faire at the moment doesn't necessarily work. That's where we want to get to. There will not be, and I really want to there will not be a rollover legislation for decades here to curtail the people and their freedoms.
Okay, Carl, we have to move on, and you've made your point, because I have a couple of other issues to put to you. The Fianna Fáil leadership, Carl, the Dublin Bay South by-election didn't go well for the party, I think it's fair to say. Councillor Deirdre Conroy got less than 5% of the vote. We've heard about the internal party research, which shows that voters see Fianna Fáil as deeply divided, not cohesive or working together, or not working for the good of the people. You've said your honest belief is that Micheál Martin won't be the party leader by the next general election. The question is why?
He's doing a very good job.
But if he's doing a very good job, Why won't he be leader of the party at the next election?
I'd like to qualify that. He's doing a good job. This is an unprecedented crisis, a crisis of a generation, and he's leading up a government and a team that, again, we do not like a lot of what we're having to do, but it's all based around two things: keeping the people of our country safe and keeping our economy buoyant and not seeing it imploding. On that basis, he's doing a good job twice over, and so is his team around him.
But surely, if he's doing a good job in what is an unprecedented situation, a once-in-a-century pandemic, if he's doing a good job in those unbelievably extraordinary circumstances, why are you saying you think the party will have a new leader by the next general election? We've heard Mark McSharry is not, he's clearly not a fan of Micheál Martin, and there are other members of your party who aren't. So is he doing a good job?
Mark McSharry, I think, is trying to bring about change of leadership through little memes of two chicks hatching out of eggs, which is absurd.
Very cryptic stuff.
No, what I would say is that this government term, you know, it's a coalition government, it's split in half. The first half will be led by the Taoiseach, Micheál Martin. The second half will be led by the then Taoiseach, Leo Varadkar. And I think there's an opportunity there, after the Taoiseach has seen out his term, Micheál Martin I'm referring to have a debate then, not now in the height of a crisis. Nobody in Clare, nobody here listening today will thank me or any of my colleagues for bringing the roof down in government. At a time we're talking about crisis management, it becomes rather self-serving to have a leadership contest, a leadership debate right now. But I think there is a time to have that. And I think the time to have that is in, you know, maybe late summer, autumn of next year, when you head into that period of transition when Leo Varadkar takes up.
But you don't think Micheál Martin has enough credit in the bank for what he's done over the past 16 months that would see him safe heading into the next general election, whenever that is, 2024, 2025?
I think that is the fair and reasonable time to have that kind of discussion. The types of divisiveness we're seeing, and it's been exaggerated as well. There's a huge amount of unity in our party, and we're dedicated to think what we need to do in terms of shoring up our economy at this time. And it's often exaggerated. There's Twitter is like a loud hailer there, coming out for meetings at times, frustratingly so. But the reality is that you know, the economy, a lot of people listening, you know, their income has been severely reduced, their way of living has been hampered, but we are at the cusp of emerging from this with an economy that didn't implode, that has been shored up. We have saved a lot of lives. A lot of what we've done we haven't enjoyed, but we're getting to that point, and I think we can have very reasonable and frank discussions about leadership. They won't happen at Clare FM. They'll happen behind closed doors, and I'll have my own say on that as well.
One other one for you, Carl. The Pathways to Work strategy, very ambitious. There's lots of aims in it. One of them to get 75,000 long-term unemployed into jobs in the next 2 years. As I say, an ambitious plan. The question is it too ambitious? Because there's quite a lot in it that you want to achieve.
I don't think a plan can ever be too ambitious. You know, we have seen over the past number of 80 months or so, we've seen a lot of unemployment, particularly in Shannon, which was industrial based, and we've seen new entrants there as well. So I think there's a number of facets to this. It's not going to be all about a strategy. There's a huge amount of work going on with the IDA, and indeed as individual TDs we have roles to play as well. I'm having a meeting on Thursday with a company that I hope to convince to come to Shannon. I think that kind of effort is ongoing the whole time, creating jobs in our county. And when you create a job, every euro that's earned in income, 80 or 90% of that recirculates immediately through the economy again. So it only stimulates the county, the region and the overall economy further.
Okay, time is against us, Michael. So just last one to you. You were calling on the GAA to ensure free-to-air broadcasting of all games next year. You oppose the renewal of the contract between Sky and the GAA. Obviously, the Clare-Wexford game is on in Thurles this weekend at 1:30. I suppose to play devil's advocate, though, Michael, Sky has received praise for their coverage and analysis of the hurling and football that they've shown over the past number of years. And some of the games shown by Sky, if Sky weren't showing them, they wouldn't be shown at all because they wouldn't be part of the RTE package.
Yeah, I mean, I think that was certainly the case at the start. But, I mean, I do think that, you know, this, all these decisions were made pre-pandemic. Since then, the GAA has received some money from government in acknowledgement of the important role it plays in Irish society. People can't go to matches in the numbers that they'd like to go to matches, and people can't meet in certain bars in a way to watch matches that they might otherwise do. So people are forced to watch matches at home because of where we're at now. And a lot of people, I don't have Sky, for example. I mean, I've no doubt that Sky, and I have in the past watched matches at friends' houses on Sky, both soccer matches and hurling matches. They do a very good job, but the point is that it's not available for ordinary people to see in their homes. And the GAA and hurling and supporting Clare and maybe being able to go for a pint without having to prove your health status are part of ordinary everyday life in Clare, and we should try to facilitate that to the greatest extent possible.
Okay.
And for me, that involves the RTE being able to show as many matches as they want. And of course, RTE have more channels now than they used to have. You have RTE News Now, you have RTE Oireachtas channel. I mean, you know, I think an awful lot of people prefer to watch a good game of hurling than on that Oireachtas channel than watching us arguing in the balls.
I think that is a line, that is a perfect way to end that. Michael McNamara, Clare Independent TD, and Cathal Crowe, Fianna Fáil TD from Meelic, thank you very much for joining us. Now, while a firm date has yet to be set for the resumption of indoor hospitality, although it won't be after July 26th, the sector is one step closer after Cabinet signed off on a plan to reopen. So as you've heard, fully vaccinated people, those who have fully recovered from the virus or under 18s who are accompanied by any of the prior cohorts will be able to dine indoors for 1 hour 45 minutes, unless the tables are 2 metres apart. The government wants to initially bring the limitation on indoor dining for a duration of 3 months. However, under the plans proposed, this could be extended if necessary. Many questions remain over the policing of such legislation, something which restaurateurs and publicans locally have deemed unworkable. So to get their further view on this, we're joined by Anne Casey from Casey's Bar in 6 Mile Bridge and Frank Landy, the owner of Sweet and Green Cafe in Ennis. Anne, I'll start with yourself. I spoke to you a couple of weeks ago. Morning to you. I spoke to you a couple of weeks ago on the show, and you know, you're clearly, like most other people in the hospitality industry, were frustrated at the situation. You at least have a date in mind. It won't be after July 26th. What do you make of all the plans with the digital COVID cert and the potential fines and so on?
Well, Alan, you know, it is a difficult place that we're in at the moment, and be it right or wrong, Alan, but it's also very positive that we are getting a chance to open our doors next week, you know, which I think is a plus for any publican in the country. And it's exciting to get our doors open and welcome back the locals. But, you know, I do feel it's going to be hard for the first week or two in particular, because, you know, asking your locals to produce a certificate that they are vaccinated, that's going to be hard. But, you know, I just feel, to be honest, I feel the locals will be 100% behind me anyway here. And I think, you know, that will go well. But as I say, it is going to be hard. It is a difficult place that we are in, Alan, to be honest about it.
Yeah, but
if I don't do this, I won't get my door open next week, you know.
Yeah. Your pub is, it's a small kind of a homely pub there in 6 Mile Bridge. I'm not sure how many staff you have, but having to take on the checks of the certs and doctor's letters and all that, is that going to be a bit of a headache?
It is going to be hard, absolutely. It is going to be hard. But, you know, we opened last September for 2 weeks, and it was all new to us as well. You know, you had to write down people's names, numbers, and that took time to do that even before the people sat down. You know what I mean? And that was all new, but we did get used to it. We only got used to it for 2 weeks, but we were getting into the swing of things. And I do think after a week or two of this, we will get into it as well. And as I say, it's the only way that I can open my door next week, Alan, you know.
Frank, are you of a similar mind to Anne, where you have reservations about certain elements of it, but the long and short of it is that if it allows you to reopen, you'd be willing to work with whatever guidelines are there?
Well, I agree. They had us over a barrel, so our back was to the wall. We have to kind of agree to anything at this stage. But I've listened to the two boys talking this morning, and you know, I'm not much wiser. I'm scouring the journal for updates. I'm reading the independent.ie for updates. I'm trying to listen to all the radio stations to hear anything I can. You know, we're being fed is drip news, leaks, this, that, and all that. I would like some proper clarity, some proper, like, I read a little article about Forge Ireland this morning talking about air ventilation system. But you can be, as soon as that is mentioned in the National Airways, every air ventilation system we're going to buy is going to treble and quadruple in value. Who's going to pay for that? Mm-hmm. Now, Anne might be very lucky at 6 Mile Bridge, where she might know 90% of her customers. I can guarantee you any cafe or restaurant, we barely know 30% of people coming in the door, maybe up to 50% if you're running kind of a small local place. But we are under severe pressure. The days of a party of four coming in and another two joining them, another one joining them, them days are done. You know, I really feel for our staff in the fact that, especially when they're banding about fines there, like it's going to be the onus is putting us. I'm 100% behind opening up our industry. I'm 100% behind everything the government has done. The wage subsidy has kept us afloat, and I'm forced to put my hand up and say, listen, they've done some great things. They've given us some great grants for the outdoor dining and helped us along those lines. But you've seen in a lot of places lately, they might as well be sitting indoors. There's tents outdoors there. It's like dining indoors, outdoors. I mean, we're really, really flaunting the law. So I'd be very concerned here, as much as Michael McNamara said, I'd be very concerned here, the workability of this project and really the basis behind it. And I know they're trying to deflect this morning with an antigen test. And, you know, if you're not into vaccines or if you don't want to get vaccinated or you're not vaccinated, go for an antigen test and you can come on into my cafe. That's only deflecting the matter. And he's talking about that being weeks down the line. Look, we'll do whatever we have to do. As an industry, the hospitality sector has done everything that's required of it, be it 2 metre distance, be it screens, be it masks, be it traceability. We've done everything required. We really need to be just a little bit more informed, a little bit more educated, a little bit more kept in the loop, because to wait from leaks for on my Twitter feed to find out what's happening in my own industry,
Well, Frank,
you are
looking for more clarity, and it seems that detailed guidance will be issued by Fulch Ireland in the coming days.
I think a lot of people who went into those meetings may have been owners of 8 bars or 10 bars who's never actually worked in a bar, or might be the owner of 20 restaurants who might never have worked in a restaurant. You know, I'm very hyper aware of the workability of this project inside my own cafe. It's going to be hard, there's no doubt about that. We'll make it work. But some people are going to have their nose out of joint, and there's absolutely nothing I can do about that to protect my premises, to protect my staff. Hmm. Unfortunately, there's going to be a fallout from it.
Yeah, and similar to what Frank is saying there, I guess it's just a case of, if it means you can open, just get on with it and try and manage the new rules and guidance as best you can.
Yeah, that's what we have to do, Ellen. And as you know, like, we have to keep people protected, keep our staff protected, keep everybody protected. And if this is what it is, Ellen, you know. I am nervous about next week, obviously, of course I am. Because, you know, it's people coming to your door, you're vaccinated. Like, it is personal as well, you know. But as I say, Ellen, just to get the front door open, that's what I want, and every publican in the country wants as well. And we just have to go with the government and try and get our industry up and running, get the restaurants, pubs and everything up and running. And this is what it is. It's hard, yeah. But this is what it is, Ellen, you know.
And you just have to deal with it.
Thank God the hospital figures are down. You're just worried about numbers, but thank God the hospital figures are down. The deaths are not there, thank God. So you're just hoping that these figures will stay down, Ellen, that we won't open to be closed down again. That's my one fear, to be honest with it as well.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm just hoping that all these figures will stay down. And the only reason they will stay down is by this happening, to let vaccinated people indoors, really, because if they're outdoors, you're okay, you know, people outside there. But, you know, and to be honest, I'm excited too, because I want to get my front door open, and I don't want to wait until next September or October for this to happen to me, you know.
Yeah, that's fair enough. Frank, I'm sure we discussed before when you were on about the issue of, you know, staff working for you, young staff who could serve people who are fully vaccinated, yet if they were to come in themselves and they're unvaccinated, they wouldn't be able to avail of the services. It seems unvaccinated staff of pubs and restaurants will be able to have a drink or a meal at their workplace.
At their workplace, which is brilliant. Now, I had already sent a few emails to TDs to say, listen, if somebody was working in the hospitality sector, let them say if you were 16, 17, 18, let them get a little note from me and they could have gone to their doctor, or they could have gone jumped the queue for the little the 18 to 24 year olds that have been vaccinated in the pharmacy. That would have been brilliant. That would have alleviated one of the problems, and that was a very simple thing to do. Yeah. We're not really queue jumping. We're not taking vaccine from the vulnerable or the ill, you know what I mean? You would have been just, you know, maybe putting in maybe 20,000 young people into the thing that would have been vaccinated. I am worried about them. And again, as somebody said to me this morning on GDPR, I can't sit down with somebody if I'm interviewing tomorrow and go, by the way, have you been vaccinated? Because it's a question I just can't ask. You know, so yeah. Like, there's a lot of misinformation, disinformation, and incorrect information out there. But on a positive note, you know, to open the doors, to seat people in, to put food on plates, you know, to kind of interact with customers again, albeit in a very strange setting for the start, it is a very positive news there, and I'd have to take that, and that's the best we can do with it at the moment.
Yeah, that's a fair enough note on which to leave it. That was Frank Landy. Frank, thanks very much. Frank is the owner of Sweet and Green Cafe in Ennis, and before him, Anne Casey from Casey's Bar in 6 Mile Bridge.